This is Radio Free Potato, February 26, 2013.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
I want to complain about the cold. I'm sitting here in front of a microphone in a garage in February, and I want to complain about how cold I am, but I'm in California. And there are people in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Alaska that would just point and laugh at me, and then I would be sad. But you know what? I don't care. It's 65 degrees, and I'm freezing my butt off. As you probably already know, and if you don't, you may need to see a doctor. We've just cracked open a fresh, brand new can of 2013, something I consider to be a major achievement considering we all died in the middle of last December. I think continuing to exist after the entire Earth has exploded is just a testament to the human spirit. Either that, or we just drink far too much Starbucks to be able to relax enough to actually be dead. I'm not sure which. I hope you've made your New Year's resolutions. I've always been a little afraid to make mine because I don't want to wind up getting myself into something I can't handle, and which is something that we all do. The New Year's coming up, we start thinking of our resolutions, and as if somehow, on the other side of the calendar, we're going to suddenly magically have the willpower to do something then that we don't have today. And then that future becomes the present, and we're sitting there like, you know, bummer, I still can't stop, you know, thinking of penguin nipples, whatever. But this year, I think I discovered the secret to a good New Year's resolution. And that is to keep it simple. Don't ask too much of yourself too quickly. Far too many people make resolutions. It's just not possible for them to keep, and pretty soon, they become jaded about the whole thing. So only ask something of yourself that's comfortably possible for you to do. And leave it a bit open-ended, you know, so you have a little wiggle room. My resolution was simply to become more productive. How much more productive? I left that blank. Just to be more productive than last year. Which will include doing more Radio Free Potatoes, so here I am. Besides that, it'll be a lot easier for me than to stop thinking about penguin nipples. This is Radio Free Potato, episode number 3. I hope that you all are keeping warm out there and that your holidays were fun and you got plenty of top-of-the-line consumer electronics made apparently by elves with tiny fingers. What do you do when you have a friend that frustrates you? And I don't mean because they constantly stomp you at gin rummy or something. I mean they frustrate you because of some opinions they have or the way they live their life. What do you do then? Well, most of us will usually try to encourage them to think about their positions. We give them more information about our own perspective, hoping they'll reevaluate their position. At least that's what we tell ourselves we're doing. What we really want is for them to agree with us. I've been finding myself with an interesting conundrum lately. I have a friend that frustrates the hell out of me sometimes because she's afraid. No, strike that. Purposely afraid of everything. She is the most frightened person. I have ever met in my life. If she finds something she's not afraid of, she'll look for reasons to be afraid of it. And ultimately, the world to her becomes this horrible, terrifying place of enemies and evil things lurking around every corner. Now, personally, I don't agree with her. I don't think the world is like that at all. And even if it was like that, it would only add extra torture to your life to live in fear of it all the time. That's my opinion. She, on the other hand, believes it's better to go through life assuming that anyone near you could just pull out a bucket of acid and throw it on your face at any given moment. She's the kind of person who would wear a bulletproof vest anywhere she went. She doesn't have one, but one of these days, she's going to get one, and I guarantee you she'll be sleeping in the thing. And this frustrates me. Now, why does it frustrate me? Because I know that there's a better way for her to live, and I care for her. We want people we care about to have happy lives, and I know that if she adopted more of the views that I have, she could live a happier life, dancing merrily through fields of daisies, free to pursue her dreams, and the hills are alive, spinning around. Why not? It works for me. I don't want to see her afraid all the time. I want to see her happy. But instead, she's constantly terrified of everything just because she won't see the world as isn't as bad as she thinks it is. And if she'd only just listen to what I was saying to her, she'd get that it's frustrating. Most of us have friends or family members who frustrate us like that. Sometimes it's because we know they'd be happier with different religious beliefs, or none at all. Or maybe they'd be happier with a different job or a different political party. Maybe if they stopped thinking about penguin nipples all the time. But for whatever reason, when we see someone we care about who seems miserable and we're not, we want to try and help to get them to think more like we do. If they're miserable and we're not, it's just logical that this would work, right? Well, the other day, someone wrote to me and commented on the RFP series, the Radio Free Potatoes. And he said that even though he liked my more angry stuff, it's good to hear me being happy once in a while. And the angry stuff he's referring to are the comedy social rant videos that I do. But I had to write back and correct them, because the fact is, making those angry rants means I am happy. When I'm stressed or feeling a bit down, that's when I work on this show. And he said, well, you don't look too happy in those videos. You actually look really annoyed. And he's absolutely right. I am annoyed, but I like being annoyed. Being annoyed actually makes me happy. I'm annoyed with everything. I will set myself up to be annoyed with things. Yeah, holy God, why can't we ever get good service at this restaurant? We ordered our drinks 3 minutes ago, and what kind of idiot would buy a car like that? That is the ugliest car, and the people who made it should be killed. And look at that bird outside, freaking bird outside. Look at that fuck chirping like he owns the whole damn world. Stupid birds. Oh, and what's this? What's it? Oh, stain in the carpet. Why doesn't the world just blow up and get it over with? That's what I sound like when I'm happy. The people I live with, God bless them, the things they put up with, they'll ask me how I'm doing, and if I say I'm doing okay, they ask me what's wrong. If I say, you know what, I suck, and this whole place sucks, and that thing right over there, yeah, that sucks too, and oh, by the way, you suck most of all, and they'll smile, just a smile will slowly spread over their face, and they'll say, my goodness, you're in a good mood today. And I'll wind up just nodding at them and saying, yeah, I really am. I don't do it to upset anyone. I just feel good when I'm annoyed. It took me years to figure that out about myself, and I still don't know why, but it's the truth. Sometimes, though, it's been very hard to get people to understand that. They figure that since I'm annoyed, I must be feeling bad. When they're annoyed, it makes them feel bad, so should be the same way with me, right? And they've tried to talk to me and get me to understand that I'd be happier if I just wasn't so annoyed with everything. And I try to tell them that if I couldn't be annoyed, I'd just be miserable. And then it hit me. What about my friend? The one who's always afraid. The one who seems to take every opportunity to be afraid. If I'm happy being annoyed, could it be possible that she's happy being afraid? Could it be that though she may not realize it, she feels comfortable, even content, when she's frightened? Everyone looks at the world through their own eyes. It's the only view we have. It's the only view we can have. The only view we know. It's easy to forget sometimes that what's best for you isn't always best for everyone. Happiness is something we each feel in different ways for different reasons. If the same things made us all happy, well, everyone would be pretty much the same, and that would make life pretty boring, which is not good, unless, of course, you're happy being bored. As much as we want to see others happy, maybe it's a good idea if before we start trying to rescue them, we consider the possibility that maybe they're already happy. So I watch a lot of cartoons. It may seem strange for a person my age to still be watching cartoons, but I just never grew out of them. There's this nearly mythical fear in our culture that children are banned by the universe from becoming adults until they abandon certain things they enjoy, like, you know, toys and playing and cartoons. And if they don't, then they'll apparently wander the earth for eternity, presumably, as perpetual six-year-olds and never grow up and never grow old and never die, and we just can't have immortal zombie children wandering around the planet reading comic books and playing with yo-yos forever because that just ain't natural. I remember when my parents and teachers began trying to wean me away from cartoons, and it backfired on a disastrous level because they kind of tried to use the idea that I wouldn't be very grown up until I found some more adult activities. And I was a pretty observant little kid. So if they thought that being a grown-up was some kind of reward for me, then they had another thing coming, by God. From what I'd seen, I didn't want any parts of being an adult. And honestly, I didn't care if anyone else thought of me as grown-up or not. I enjoyed cartoons, so I didn't see any reason to stop watching them. When I was a kid, almost all of the cartoons were played on Saturday mornings. There weren't any channels playing cartoons 24/7 like there are now, so the networks would play cartoons from about 5 a.m. till around noon. About 7 solid hours of cartoons every Saturday. Sunday, not as much. Sunday was like the discount Christian Saturday of cartoons. There were some, but they were mostly just had creepy characters staring at you and demanding you love Jesus. I was even a Christian at the time, and I didn't even like them. So Saturday was the time, man, the pivotal point of my whole week. And I'd be right there in front of the TV, 5 a.m. every time. My mother drove herself to an early grave to get me awake and out the door at 8 a.m. on school days, even though she's somehow still alive. But Saturday mornings, 5 a.m., bam, I'm awake. I'm planted in front of the TV. Parents aren't even awake yet. I'm already up. And now suddenly they're telling me that I have to give them up. Not on your life. So I've always been a fan of cartoons, and I still am, and I always will be. Only now I can sleep late on Saturday. And there's an interesting thing that I've noticed about cartoons lately. Listen to this sound clip. Life is like a hurricane in Duckburg. Race cars, lasers, aeroplanes. It's a duck blur. Might solve a mystery or rewrite history. Duck tales. Every day they're out there making. some of you may have found yourself singing along with that one. That was, of course, the theme to DuckTales, a cartoon that was started in 1987, and I thought it was a pretty groovy cartoon, personally. One of the newest cartoons that I really like is called The Amazing World of Gumball. Let's check out the opening theme to that. Interesting. Let's go back again and listen to another cartoon theme from the 80s. Okay, admittedly, I didn't really watch Jim very much, or at all, really. That seemed to be more of interest to girls, so I'd just skip past that one. But a show that I never skip, if I can help it, is Regular Show, my favorite cartoon in the world right now. Let's check out the intro theme to that. So, what the heck's going on here? There's nothing to sing along with. Not even any kind of melody you can hum. I mean, yeah, 80s cartoon music was very 80s, but at least it was there. How can you get ready to watch your favorite cartoon if you don't have an intro to dance around and sing along with? You gotta have that. The anticipation is part of the fun, isn't it? So, why are cartoon intros getting so much shorter? Well, I think I have a little bit of insight into that. Check out what The Amazing World of Gumball sounds like when you turn it on in the country of India.
No tension, no figure. Gumball aa gaya idhar. Atrangi duniya lekar.
You guessed it, it is a full song. So it's not everyone, but just here that this is happening. And the reason it's happening is because television over the years has demanded more and more commercial time, to the point that now the people who make the cartoons have nothing left to cut shorter but the intros. Okay, admittedly, not all cartoons are doing this, and the ones that I just played are pretty extreme examples, but that's the direction it's all headed. Personally, I wonder how long it'll be until the show we're watching is the 90 seconds every 15 minutes between the commercials. I'm going to read another story from my past today. I hope you don't mind. It's a true story. It's part of my life that really influenced the way I feel about things to this day. Hopefully you might learn something from it, and if you don't, I hope you at least enjoy listening. A face is an amazing thing. It's astonishing how many tools for communication and perception are right there on the front of our heads. What's even more amazing is the subtle ways we've learned to use those tools. Everything we think and feel, everything we are, is roadmapped in roughly a 7-inch oval. Faces are paintings of the universe we keep inside ourselves. I didn't always have such an appreciation for the human face, mainly because they tend to be attached to humans. My younger years were spent in sneering mistrust of people. By the age of 7, I'd never met one who didn't do or try to do something bad to me. On top of that, I never seemed to be able to relate to them. They all followed a set of social rules that I didn't understand. Well, to be honest, I didn't care to understand. Like they were running a computer program that I didn't have installed. So, I just avoided them as much as I could. I take the chance. Had it not been for spectacular timing, I may have spent my youth alone, playing with the only thing I really enjoyed at the time, my chemistry set. This could have possibly changed the world as we know it, since such an outcome would have likely resulted in significant portions of the United States being vaporized or perhaps melted. But as luck would have it, the thrust of history converged, the planets aligned and the universe decided just at that time to coalesce a brand new form of entertainment, video games. And just when I'd reached the age to know how to put a quarter in tiny slots, the odds were staggering. It was clear that video games were invented just for me. The first video game I ever saw was Pac-Man. I found it at a nightclub a friend of my father owned during closing hours. It sat there, warming the dark corner around it with a white and yellow glow. The whine of the screen called to me. In this dark place that was only for adults, surrounded by substances and secrets forbidden, this flickering object was the apple in the Garden of Eden. I had to stand on a chair to get a better look at it. What was this amazing monolith of curiosities? What were these compelling characters on the screen doing? Most importantly, what did these wonderful buttons do? My father handed me a quarter. "Play this while I talk to Steve." I plunked the quarter in the slot. The machine made a delightfully electronic sound, which might have been misunderstood to most people. I, however, was in direct psychic communication with the electronic beast. It said, "Thank you." At the push of a button, I was thrust into a dream world of colors and patterns and music and sound that I'd never heard before. It was a universe in a box with rules and goals, accomplishments and failure, and I controlled it. There was no homework, no school bullies, no dentist visits or chores. They evaporated under the persistence of this new temporary existence. And all for only 25 cents. The game only lasted a few minutes. It was, after all, the first time I'd ever played. But it didn't matter. I was addicted. From that point on, whenever I saw one of these sinful machines sitting in a corner in the back of a convenience store in the entrance to a department store, no quarter in the area was safe. I learned 1,000 ways of asking for a quarter from my mother and father and my friends, even from total strangers. I had to play the game. At one point, I learned that if I became annoying enough, my mother would give me $2 to go to the quick stop at the end of the block and play video games for a couple of hours. Life in my family was never the same after that. One day, my parents decided to take me to Phoenix to a place called Aladdin's Castle. This was a mistake. Aladdin's Castle, the biggest video arcade chain in America at the time. 3 floors of buzzing, plinking stand-up machines, the soft glow of recessed lighting keeping the labyrinth of brightly colored cabinets in a perpetual state of dusk as they all played snippets of electronic jingles that should have turned into a foul racket, but instead wove itself into a symphony of challenge, excitement, and escape. The smell of new carpet and electronics hung in the air like the whole place had just been taken out of a sealed plastic bag. It was heaven. And as I went from game to game, getting lost in the intoxicating symmetry of the screens in front of me, I didn't notice the outside world fading away from my reality. The troubles, the schedules, the worries and fears, all becoming a mere whisper in the back of my mind until they simply vanished. I didn't notice it, that is, until I stepped back into the blistering whitewash of sky, traffic fumes, and the blurring drone of thousands of worried, annoyed, and angry lives. I don't remember for sure, but I'm fairly certain my parents had to pry me from the doors. Needless to say, video games were an escape for me from the very first quarter. And as the years went by, there was no lack of horrors in my life to escape from, not the least of which was the public school system. The social pecking order was beginning to form. Some kids led while other kids followed. Some were victims while others were abusers. And, as I quickly learned, if you wanted no position at all in this tree of primates, you were automatically placed at the bottom. In third grade, I was beaten up because my lunchbox had the Dukes of Hazzard on it instead of Superman. In fourth grade, I was beaten up because I decided to take band instead of football. By the time fifth grade came around, I was being beaten because I was simply the one who was always being beaten. When I walked in the school in the morning, It was a coin toss on whether or not I'd come out bleeding in the afternoon. But the whole time, I knew that after it was all over, I could crawl back to my favorite arcade machine and it would all go away, dissolved into binary existentialism and pixelated spaceships, as I watched the 8-bit hordes of antagonists slowly turn into the faces of my enemies and thought about how, sooner or later, I would make them all pay for how they treated me. The years went by. Pac-Man gave way to Asteroids, then Tempest, then Tron, Super Mario Brothers, Street Fighter, Dragon's Lair, slayed thousands of flying knights on Joust, destroyed legions of evil animated trees in Crystal Castles. I'd spent more money in more arcades than I could ever possibly count. It was probably enough to buy my own arcade. Within each different arcade existed its own vibrant, diverse society. There were the authority figures, the employees, the ones who handed out the quarters, normal citizens. You had complete junkies over here, famed rock stars over there. I was one of the quiet, angry ones. It was a small enough group, but we were all there for the same reason, retribution. We were getting revenge, one quarter at a time, even if it was just in our minds. And it was within the dim confines of this flashing electronic landscape that I first met Goldie. Goldie wasn't his real name. It's what we all called him because he had a mouthful of gold teeth. I can safely say from the very first moment I saw Goldie, I hated him with a passion. Game Castle was my arcade of choice at this point in my life. I was having a particularly frustrating day arguing with the Street Fighter II machine. I thought Chun-Li's ass should be kicked, but it continued to emphatically disagree with me, and Chun-Li was wiping the floor clean with my face. At the very worst moment, when I finally turned the fight around and started making a comeback, when I needed all of my focus to finally win this fight and go home, there he was, standing right next to me. A short, waifish black kid, I guess somewhere in his late teens. Flattened face, pockmarked with acne scars, and a wild afro with a pick always stuck in it. He was dressed like it was winter outside, even though it was August. He smelled like stale onions. He looked like the homeless guys you saw wandering around 6th Street near the Salvation Army. Was he homeless? It was certainly possible. I was instantly creeped out. The guy was standing practically shoulder to shoulder with me, watching my screen with what appeared to be more emotional investment than even I had. He kept moving closer and closer to the screen until he was nearly blocking my view of it. My concentration became disrupted, and in just a few moments, the fight I had turned around ended with me being pummeled to dust, and the game announcing in a brash, sickeningly amused voice, "You lose." Then it happened. Goldie threw back his head and laughed. Uproarious, uninhibited laughter so loud the combined blips and zaps of all the arcade machines couldn't compete with it. He bounced back and forth, pointing at me in nearly hysterical mirth, literally dancing gleefully right in front of me. Who was this complete asshole? He backed toward the middle of the arcade, still laughing and mocking my failure as though nothing in the universe had ever or will ever be so damned funny. I felt my fist clench. I wanted to punch him. I wanted to punch him very hard. And this wouldn't be the last time I saw Goldie. More often than not, the moment I walked into the arcade, there he'd be. Pacing in circles around the arcade floor, dancing awkwardly to some music that was not playing. No one was safe from Goldie's hyena-like laugh when they would be exploded or killed. He would carefully stalk his target, watching the screen from only inches away, and inevitably, when the player would lose, Goldie would roll laughing on the floor as though nothing was more important than this private joke he had with the universe. It became slowly obvious that Goldie either had some form of mental illness, or he was just looking for a fight. I remember thinking it wouldn't be long until someone took serious offense to him and clocked him across the jaw. And to be very honest, I wanted to be there to see it. Just to point and laugh at him when it happened, dancing gleefully. I dropped out of high school when I was 16, in the middle of the 9th grade. Eighth grade, junior high, was the last full year of public school I completed. On my last day, I dropped my Walkman just outside the front doors of the high school. A kid shoved me face first into the snow while I was bending over to pick it up. I'd never seen or heard of him before. Just some random person. I'd had it. There seemed to be no other point to this institution of insanity than to make sure I was miserable on a daily basis. I stood up, dusted myself off, walked home, and I never went back. This complicated things. It was more difficult to go to my usual arcade because, frankly, I didn't feel like being harassed by other kids from my school for dropping out. If you thought kids were cruel in school, they were doubly so outside where there were no teachers to stop them. Quite a few of them also spent time at the arcades. It seemed as though my love affair with video games might finally have come to an end. But once again, the universe intervened, and that Christmas, Santa Claus saw his way to leaving a Nintendo Entertainment System under our tree. Free, unlimited video games, right in my own house. This was as close to a miracle as I ever believed I'd see. Now, Mortal Kombat, Time Stalkers, and Afterburner gave way to Kid Icarus, Zelda, and Final Fantasy. Games that weren't just moving simple shapes around mazes or firing dots at other little dots. Games that were stories, games that didn't last for only minutes, but days and sometimes weeks, unfolding into fantastic narratives with deep characters and driving plots. I could sit in a darkened room and immerse myself for hours in my escape, stewing, letting the outside world and its cruelty fester under my skin the entire time, until all I could feel for the world was bile and vomitous rot for the way I'd been treated, feeding my own contempt for society for the rest of my teen years and into my 20s. I hadn't realized it, but my escape had turned into a cage. The world outside, the people, the places changed, but my distaste for them remained the same. I have never spent one day of my life since that time without being thankful I don't have to return to that horrible place called school. You might think it's something that fades after a certain amount of time, but for me, even at 40 years old, whenever I see a school bus pass on the street or a gaggle of children trudging down the sidewalk wearing backpacks in the morning, I thank every god in the sky that I don't have to go with them. But this story is supposed to be about faces, remember? That is how it started out. You see, it just so happens that years after high school and into my college years, I passed by one of my beloved old arcades, now a fading shadow of a business against the advent of home gaming. It was one of the few left in town. The possibility became very real to me at that moment that this could be the last time I'd see it. So I stopped in. The games were different, but the atmosphere was the same. The machines now had slots to take paper dollars. Expensive though it was, I started up a game for nostalgia's sake and began to play. And as I shot at the aliens on the screen in front of me with a fluorescent pink plastic gun, I sensed something familiar. A smell from my past. And a presence. I slowly glanced to my right, and there he was. Goldie. Inching toward me and my game ever so carefully. Wouldn't it be perfect? The last time in my old favorite arcade, the last game I would play there, and to end it with finally clobbering that obnoxious laughing idiot and walking out. I could already feel it happening. If Goldie opened that hole in his face to laugh at my failure again, he was getting knocked out. I felt my temperature rise as he floated ever closer to the game screen. He began to dance back and forth, almost as if he was anticipating the upcoming orgasm of Scheidenfreude. Without warning, on the screen, an alien jumped into view and slashed at my character. "You died," displayed on the screen. And as if to the heavens, Goldie began to roar with laughter and dance. That was it. I drew my fist back and I spun to face the buffoon. And when I did, I saw a face I will never in my life forget. Goldie reeled backwards away from me, slapping his hands over his mouth. And though he continued to laugh, his eyes were terrified. His brow furrowed in pitiful worry and remorse as he desperately tried to muffle the sounds coming out of his mouth. From between his fingers, I could see that some of Goldie's gold teeth were missing now. Obviously, He'd already been beaten for this. And as he shifted back and forth with fear, his eyes wide and primal as an animal gazing into its own demise, his body continued to convulse with hideous laughter. I've never seen a more pitiable expression. Laughter, fear, and confusion all on the same face. Each there because they couldn't understand why the others were. I didn't hit Goldie. It was clear to me now that he couldn't control this. It wasn't his fault. I simply walked out of the arcade and went home. But others had not been so kind. Why had I wanted to hit him in the first place? Was it because he was laughing? Or was it simply because he was a target? When I played video games, I would pretend the game enemies were the people who had hurt me. Did I also see Goldie as the people who had hurt me? Had I become so vengeful and angry that I would hurt an innocent person because others had hurt me? And the people who'd hurt me, had they simply been hurt by others and I was their Goldie? I will never forget Goldie's face. But in a way, I'm pretty happy about that. It reminds me that hate, anger, spite, all vengeful emotions run in a vicious circle. And the only way to stop it is to break the cycle. If you fight fire with fire, you just get more fire. The same thing happens when you fight anger with anger. If you feed it, it will grow. But if you starve it, it dies. And only you can choose which. In the words of the BioShock video game character Andrew Ryan, a man chooses, a slave obeys. You will never defeat anger if you become a slave to it.
Extraordinary video robot, batteries not included. He helps you tackle even the toughest challenge. Will you be the first to raise the incredibly accurate Zapper and play games like Duck Hunt or action-packed Hogan's Alley and high-flying Kung Fu, each sold separately? Will you be the one to experience the Nintendo Entertainment System? Comes with Rob, Zapper, Control Deck, two controllers, Gyromite, and Duck Hunt.
Ah, old commercials. Let's see. What do we have coming up? Pretty soon, the 2 Cent Show will be starting back up. We're going to be tweaking the format a little because, well, to tell you the truth, I think it's starting to get a little bit formula. That's one of the reasons that it's been delayed so long is because I'm starting to get bored with it. I'll be honest. I'm starting to get bored with the way the 2 Cent Show is laid out. And if I am, as the host, am getting bored with it, then I know that some of the viewers out there have to be getting bored with it. So, you know, it's not like in the old days when we just set up with some news material and then just goof off and have fun. It's kind of just started to feel like it's a scheduled set of segments, and I don't like that. So I want it to be fun again. We're going to be shaking it up a little. And we've got a new co-host coming in, too, that you may enjoy. We're also going to have some more shows coming out. We got a few shows based on video game reviews, and just general goofing off with video games. If you like video games, you may enjoy those. I've got a pretty good idea of my touring schedule for 2013, and I'll have a few more shows this year than I did last year. Also, should have a new DVD coming out somewhere in the middle of the year, probably to be premiered at Anthrocon. There is a rumor going around that I'll be moving to Portland, Oregon, and unlike most rumors, this one actually has a grain of truth to it. Surprise, surprise. My fiance and I are planning to move out of California sometime in the next year and a half or so. And Portland is one of the places we're heavily considering moving to. By the way, if there are any furries from the Portland area listening, thank you for your help when I wrote to the PDX Furs asking for info. You guys were, you seem really friendly up there. You were very helpful. Why are we moving? Well, It's nothing scandalous or anything. California is just insanely expensive to live in. A lot of people look at California and think, hey, look at that. They make Jesus amounts of money in California. It must be awesome to live there. But considering the fact that a studio apartment costs about $2,000 a month out here, and that's in a bad neighborhood, you have to make at least $100K a year just to live. And I am not exaggerating. Ask your friends from California. They'll tell you the same thing. That and the fact that the state of California almost couldn't get more draconian. Well, I've been here for 5 years now, and I think I've seen enough. So it's time to move on. However, I can promise you that wherever I do move to, my studio will be coming with me, and there will be more RFPs in the future. So thank you for tuning into the show, and we will see you again soon. Radio Free Potato is copyright Ranting Griffin Studios. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please send an email to 2@ranting-griffin.com. All right, this is It is too fucking cold in here. I'm going to get a better heater. I've got to get a bigger heater in here. My balls are frozen to the chair. I can't even move. Ugh.